listening.
I have two thoughts I picked for our ethics thought. The first one is a standard. I may have even used it before. Just inspired me for the first of the year. James Madison from the Federalist Papers, 1788. If men were angels, no government would be necessary. And, of course, there is a necessity for government. And even one step further, there's a necessity for the Ethics Commission. So I thank everybody here for volunteering to pursue this noble endeavor. And the second quote is from Brian Tracy, Eat That Frog. And this has to do with what kind of goals we pick for the year. And he says, you cannot eat every tadpole and frog in the pond, but you can eat the biggest and the ugliest one, and that will be enough, at least for the time being. So our goal is to get some the biggest and ugliest ones, if there are any, and eat them first.
Thank you. Sorry,
yeah. All right.
We had a lot of meetings in November, so this is a catch-up of all of the minutes, so we'll be up to date on posting them on the website.
So moved.
Aye.
Aye.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask if the chair would allow the attorney from General Counsel's office, Steve Durden, to be bumped up on the agenda so that he can leave. He's waiting in the audience, and I can give a little bit of an intro if you want him to. Yeah. We will have Steve Durden give you a report on an opinion that General Counsel's office has just issued. I think it was in November, blur for December. But if you recall, the commission last year looked into the issue, the legislative committee, and Brian All was chairing it, looked into the issue of when a person comes to address city council. Should they have to announce their name and their address on the record? Because city council passed a new provision last year that they had to announce their home address. And so there was discussion on whether or not there were some citizens who did not like that idea that in a controversial issue you would have to announce your address, your home address. And so it was pending an opinion from General Counsel's office, and Steve Durden is here to talk to you about that.
Thank you, ma'am. Happy New Year. Stephen Durden from the General Counsel's Office. Now, would you like me to just discuss briefly what my opinion was, or do you have questions on the procedure? Maybe I'm not quite sure how you'd like me to proceed here. Okay, sure. No. Yes, ma'am. Going back a little bit, the state legislature adopted a an amendment to the public meeting law 286.0114 and paren 4, which talked about the right of the public to speak at meetings of that are governed by the Sunshine. And the city council has probably a history of one of the most open and available to the public sets of meetings in the state. We actually, in doing the research, we found out that not every city council or county commission actually allows public comment all at every meeting, but we have for decades, city council has for decades, going back at least until the late 80s and maybe before that, a public comment period. I mean, there's always public meetings. There's public hearings on there are certain bills under state law and under the ordinance code and charter. There are certain bills that have to have what's called a hearing, and it's related to that specific bill. But we've also allowed public comment really for 20, 30 years, if not more, the city council has. But the state statute has come about, says there needs to be public comment. And in order to have the and it needs to be some at least once, and it needs to be somewhat near the time that the body makes its decision, not necessarily at the same meeting. So city council or you could have on your agenda, for example, a new proposal of whatever sort. You have public comment today, and then you vote on it at the next meeting. That's perfectly, and maybe even next month or something like that. You don't have to have it right. But right then. So what happened was the council has traditionally, with its open, very open to the public approach, has asked for names and addresses of speakers. And some of the speakers weren't sure they wanted to do that anymore. They read the Florida statute 286.0114 and said, well, you can't ask for that because it says in the statute, you're only entitled to ask for the statute reads, the rules and policy of a board or commission which govern the opportunity to be heard are limited to those that, and then it lists a few of them. And having read that, I'll go through them if you'd like, but some people read that and said, see, it doesn't say in there that you're entitled to ask for the name or address, so you can't ask for our name or address. So I don't remember which council member. This is addressed. My memo is addressed to council member Creston Binney, but it was a general council question, to be honest with you, about since it says are limited to, can we still ask for the names and addresses? So I did a statutory analysis, and I might as well let you know. I mean, that's rather than try and make it oblique. The limited to, okay, this is what the council's entitled to do. Provide guidelines for the amount of time. Well, okay, that's pretty straightforward. That's one thing that the council's entitled to, provide guidelines for the amount of time an individual has to address. Prescribe procedures for allowing representatives to speak. In other words, this council can say, here's a rule. If you are going to represent a group of people, this is how we want you to do it. So we can prescribe procedures. The city council or any board can, I'll go to the fourth one, designate a specific time period of time for public comment. For example, the beginning of the meeting, the end of the meeting, after midnight, just kidding about the after midnight thing. But, you know, you can prescribe whatever part of the meeting is going to be the public comment. You don't have to do it first. You don't have to do it last. You can choose. Okay. The last one is that you can, the commission, the board of any sort, can prescribe procedures or forms for an individual to use. So we can provide, any board can prescribe, here's your form. The form has three parts. Inform the board of a desire to be heard. And it says, quote, to inform the board or commission of a desire to be heard. Or two, to indicate his or her support, opposition, or neutrality on a proposition. So you can say, I'm for or against, or I'm neutral. And third, indicate that he or she is a designated representative. Well, those second two and three are relatively straightforward, which is indicate for or against or neutral, indicate designation of representative. So I then looked at the last section, which is, quote, You can have procedures or forms for an individual use in order to, quote, inform the board of a desire to be heard. So what does that mean? Well, doesn't say you can't ask for a name. It doesn't say you can ask for a name. And unfortunately or fortunately, it's in about as passive a voice as you can indicate. So how does, who is informing the board or commission of a desire to be heard? It's a speaker. Well, speaker is, do it this way, it's a noun, but there's 50 speakers. They can't all be speaker. In other words, you can't just simply say speaker, I'd like to be heard. You have to designate yourself. Suppose everybody says, I'm going to designate myself as X. Well, that doesn't really help very easily the board very much at all, which is, X, please come to the podium. Well, everybody comes to the podium because they all call themselves X. Anonymous, please come to the board, to the front. Everybody that wants to be anonymous comes to the front. You don't know how to, there's no order in this. So the idea is that it's an individual, it is a particular speaker. A speaker has some designation, which in our common approach to the world is a name. And that's the goal, the idea is that the best way for someone to designate, I would like to speak, is to say who I is. And that's the basic premise of the analysis. Tell me who the I is. I, Stephen Durden, would like to speak. And in part, to help distinguish, because there are a wide variety of last names, but some are similar, I, Stephen Durden, well, maybe there aren't that many Stephen Durdens, but I'm William Smith, there might be quite a few of those, so addresses are there. That's part of why I believe the designation to say, look, tell us who you are so you can speak, because this is about order. This is about creating a sense of order at the meeting. Now, to step back from that, I also analyzed the First Amendment, just to be certain. And in the First Amendment, the case law is quite clear that should a city council, county commission, this ethics commission could decide that given that your duties and powers are over the city of Jacksonville, not Gainesville, not Miami, not New York City, you could decide that nobody speaks to you who's not from Jacksonville under the First Amendment. I don't think that would be accurate under the public record, under the public meeting law, but under the First Amendment, you could say, we only want to hear from Jacksonville people because we're concerned with what people in Jacksonville think. It's a common, in fact, that's one of the most common reasons to ask for a name and address to make sure that there is some sense of relevance to what's going on. And the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the federal circuit that oversees Jacksonville, it oversees Alabama, Florida, and Georgia, but oversees Jacksonville, issued a decision that it would be okay to prohibit or to limit speakers solely to people that live in that jurisdiction because there is a limited amount of time. To put it a different way, let's suppose there were a controversial bill that had some sort of national import or significance. You might have 500 people or 1,000 people from another city taking up the time of the local government when they're trying to pass a local ordinance or not pass a local ordinance or whatever that government's trying to do. You might have dozens, hundreds of people who aren't from the city trying to, it's not that their message has no value, but the council, a board, would justifiably prefer that they only listen to people from the local jurisdiction. Well, stepping back from that, if the First Amendment allows the city council to limit speakers to residents, then certainly the First Amendment allows the board to say, where do you live? Because you can't limit it to residents without knowing where they live and who they are. Yes, ma'am. I think that's how they're doing it. Now, the procedure, I believe at this point the blue cards require the name and address. That's correct. Well, in the end, because the First Amendment issues involved, because the First Amendment is very broad and protective of the right to speak, it would suggest that if you can limit speakers based on the First Amendment, it's certainly not inconsistent to take that same approach with regard to the public record, the public meeting law, 286.0114. The idea being that just like the First Amendment recognizes the importance and significance of knowing where people are from. It actually affects how people think through things. It makes a difference for district council members to know whether or not the person complaining is from the district. Now, that doesn't mean, for example, if the question is about something that occurs in District 1 and the person doesn't live in District 1 but works in District 1, then the person can always say, hey, I live in District 9, but I'm actually work in District 1, or I live in District 9 and I work in District 10, but I always have to drive through District 1, which is where I run into the problem. I mean, people can always add to it, but it helps in getting a feel for what's being done. And it also very quickly allows someone who says, hey, I live over in such and such a street and this is where such and such a problem is, or this is such an, or maybe this is a good thing that happened in my neighborhood. It's common for the council president go, well, your council district person is, and point right to the person right there. So it allows a quick help in understanding who might help them, the speaker, solve a problem or seek a resolution.
Well, this was discussed in the legislative committee, and so it's a new issue to the new people, and so they might need some time to think with it a little bit and maybe hear the report from the legislative committee.
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. One of the questions I had was, I know that this statute, and it's been a couple months, so bear with me. The statute required comment, and I think we talked about as I'm trying to think of the correct terminology, but it was like public comment was required.
Yes.
But then other types of comments were not required, and that was something that the city council just afforded the citizens. Okay, what were the two? Do you remember the two differences that we talked about?
I can help you with that. I think I know.
That's fine.
Okay,
and I think Steve's answer is going to be the same. I'm Kirby Aberdorfer from the Ethics Office, for the record. I think, Anthony, what you're referring to in terms of the discussion at the Legislative Committee was that the statute does talk about public comment on a pending matter, a particular matter. And so City Council's process for that is the public hearing portion of their agenda on second reading. Second reading ordinances always get a public hearing, and then second resolutions, although may or may not be required, they also get a public hearing. And City Council differentiates that from general public comment, which any member of the public can come address council about any matter that they want to.
Thank
it's
you.
Not limited to the particular matter on consideration by council. Does that clarify it?
Yes. Did your office did that differentiation come into your analysis at all, or was it not relevant to you?
In the end, it's not relevant because, and the reason for it is that we made it clear for the 286.0114, the required public participation. Let's separate participation versus comment, all right? For the specific public participation that's required, the City Council has amended its agenda so that if there is a bill that falls under 286.0114, and that would be, I find it hard to believe that it wouldn't be every ordinance. So my guess is every ordinance. And resolutions that do specific things. There are exemptions for certain ordinances. But anything that requires the public comment under public participation under 286.0114 now actually has a public hearing on the agenda. The open I might call it, the other one is open mic night, where you just come talk about whatever you feel like. It's supposed to relate to local government, but if you go to enough city council meetings, you'll see that the tie to the local government might be a little bit tenuous at best. We sometimes hear about Congress and the president. But anyway, the fact is, it's that open part is not restricted. The forms are just slightly different, but in the end, they're basically the same. So all we wanted to make sure is that they understood what the minimum allowed is. The question was, could we ask for names and addresses if we wanted to under 286-0114? And our answer was yes.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Now, does the city council have any obligation to show what they're using that for? Do they ever deny speakers? Because if I was from Alabama, they just say you can't speak? Or
That does not happen, and that is not within the rules. The idea is just to help gauge where the person's from. It affects, let's be honest, it affects how people think through things. If they're in your district and they're talking about drainage, it's going to impact your thinking versus if it's not in your district. Or if they're if they're from another state and they're talking about the city council budget, thank you. We appreciate your philosophical discussions on budget, but we're, you know, they won't say it, but eventually, and it's like, okay, we're more interested in the very specifics that we want money to go here, here, and here because we live here. But there's no doubt that if someone from another city or state comes in and speaks to the council and they speak about an ordinance that has sort of citywide impact, if they make a good argument, the council will listen. It's more to create a system to make sure they go ahead and ask the question every time rather than say for some things we will and some things we won't. That's another impact to it. It's just like, let's just go ahead and make it clear. Everybody does this.
A point of clarification to Mr. Hartley's question. Just to make sure, Steve's memo may not have differentiated between the public hearing versus public comment portion, but there is a difference in city council meetings. If you put in to be a speaker at public comment, there is the leader of the floor. The floor leader, before public comment begins, reads a list of instructions that says, in order to have the privilege of the floor, you must give your name and address. That is not said during the public hearing portion of the agenda. The instructions are not the same.
Gotcha. What's the section that you referenced from which you derived that the council could take the name and address, could require the name and address?
Section of the Florida statutes?
Yes.
286-0114 paren 4.
And do you have that quote in front of you?
Yeah. Yes, sir. I think I read it, but I'll read it again.
Oh, you did? Yeah. I just missed it.
Do you mind
reading it for me?
No, I don't mind at all. Rules and if you have this memoranda, I can tell you it starts on page 4.
Okay.
At the bottom.
Do I have this memory?
No.
Pass out.
No.
Oh, it hasn't. Okay. No, well, I'm happy to read it. I'll just read it. Rules and policies of a board or commission which govern the opportunity to be heard are limited to those that. So the rules are limited to those that, one, or A, provide guidelines regarding the amount of time an individual has to address the board or commission. B, prescribe procedures for allowing representatives of groups or factions on a proposition to address the board or commission rather than all members of such groups or factions at meetings in which a large number of individuals wish to be heard. C, prescribe forms, procedures, or forms for an individual to use in order, one, to inform the board or commission of a desire to be heard, two, to indicate his or her support, opposition, or neutrality on a proposition, and three, to indicate his or her designation of a representative to speak for him or her or his or her group on a proposition if she so chooses, or D.
Thanks. I think that you're welcome to finish, but I think that covered it. So it was 4C1 is where you got the requirement?
Yes.
You got the allowance for a requirement of name and address.
Yes.
So that you have to say that you want to be heard. In order to do that, the council can require that you provide your name and address.
Yeah, it's just a, yes, sir. That's the basic analysis. You said
all
it.
Right, that was really, maybe that was my fault. It was a roundabout way of asking.
No, that's, I see as much, if you're around me long enough, you'll be like the city council and says, why didn't you just say it like that the first time? So, okay, fine. That's
Ms. John Parr.
My question is, if a person comes before city council and you mentioned this, that they must give their address, then they would be denied the opportunity to speak if they do not give their address?
If they don't put it on the form, that's correct.
Have we looked at other municipalities and counties and even the state? Does the state at the legislature require addresses?
Okay, well, let's make it clear. The state legislature is not bound by the Sunshine Law or the public records law, not even a little bit.
But they do have public comments.
They do, but they're not bound by these same rules. Their rules are completely different. Now, with regard to... there are a number of legislatures who have adopted laws that apply to everybody but them. From just the way it goes. The answer to this is the requirement for name and address, I believe, is required by every border agency at the state level. There's a rule of procedure that requires name and address on the card or the something like that. I researched, and I wasn't the only one, I've researched every possible way of any possible court, administrative body, or the attorney general, or anybody else who has ever interpreted this section of the code, and there is nothing that says one way or the other on this. But there are. It is not uncommon to ask for the name and address. I believe at the state level, I'd have to look again to make sure. But the rule, I believe, under various rules, each border agency has its own rules, and they're all exactly the same, or almost all of them, and they require name and address.
What happens if a person doesn't have an address? Maybe they're homeless.
Well, they can say that. I mean, I don't know that that's going to. I don't think that's been a problem. I mean, they could say they're homeless then. I mean, and someone may ask, well, where do you normally stay? And say, well, they'll either stay on the sidewalk, or I stay at the Sulzbacher Center or some other place. I mean, you can ask them that. I mean, it's. Mm-hmm. But that, frankly, I don't know that that's an issue that's ever come up. But this is while these rules are there, but if someone really doesn't have a place, then they say, I really don't have a place. Okay.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Durden. I'm sorry. Did you have a question, Ms. M?
I don't have a question. I just wanted to know if it's the chair's wish to get into a discussion of this now or defer it to another time, because there is another flip side, I guess, to these arguments, which has been discussed in the legislative committee, and it's important that the Ethics Commission promotes transparency and citizens feeling free to come and address the City Council. And I understand the argument. It's important to know if they're from Jacksonville. Good. Say if you're from Jacksonville or not. Say if you're in the council member's district for zoning. But when you have to give a specific address on controversial issues on a TV camera, there are people that have indicated to me personally that they feel that that's a chilling effect on their ability to speak. I see no reason. Logically, I mean, I think you can argue it on the statutory grounds or on constitutional grounds, but I see no logical reason that someone has to give their specific address. And I've been told that if a minor comes, and, you know, kids come to speak in front of City Council, you don't have to give your address. Lobbyists come, and they don't have to give their home address. They can give an office address. And I think on some controversial issues that come in front of City Council, especially some that are going definitely to be coming in the next couple of weeks, asking for people to give a specific street address on a TV camera is a chilling effect, and I think we ought to take that into account and either discuss it now, decide what the Ethics Commission wants to do or not do in this particular situation. But there are citizens who would want to speak to that, and it's a transparency issue, a chilling effect issue. And I get the constitutional arguments. I get it. But I think that there's a different angle here that we should explore either now or later in this meeting or in a special committee.
Okay. Mr. Durden, I want to thank you for coming.
My pleasure.
I appreciate you offering clarity with regard to your analysis and wanted to make sure that everyone had an opportunity to ask questions before you wrapped up.
Yes, ma'am. And I know that that y'all probably haven't read the memo, but if you, after having read the memo, were interested in having me come back, you have other questions. I mean, I, It's nice to know what the questions are ahead of time, but that's okay if I don't. That's okay too. But I mean, only the only reason it's nice to know the questions ahead of time, it helps me prepare a little bit. But
okay,
if you have questions about this and would like me to readdress this at any time, please don't hesitate.
Thank you so much.
I'm honored. Thank you.
So we will defer for our section on committee reports to talk about a little bit further, if you'd like tonight. And then if additional time is needed, then we'll set a date to have a separate discussion that just solely focuses on that. Okay. All right. So we're going to jump into introductions. And although the agenda states that we would just do that for our new folks, I'd actually like to just have everyone to introduce themselves in addition to making our new folks feel welcome. So we will start over here.
Practicing as a lawyer now since 1998. I started out in the Attorney General's office, and then I worked in the State Department of Health and the County Attorney's Office in Tallahassee. And I'm here having a good time working with Carla and Kirby and all of you guys here. So thanks.
Thank you, Terry.
I'm Carla Miller, and this is my 20th year working on Jacksonville Ethics, first as a volunteer on the Ethics Commission like you guys, and I chaired the commission when we got our first ethics code in, and I wrote in, there shall be an ethics office and an ethics director, not thinking that it would be me one day. And I came in 2007 as a part-time employee, and it was just me. And now I'm happy to say that Kirby is with us as deputy director. And Deborah is going to give a little bit of her background, but she's our new employee. So we now have three people in the office. And, you know, ethics and working on this program has been my passion in my life. And I really enjoy all the good people that have come forward. Each person has so much to offer. And so I'm very excited to see returning members, new members, and I look forward to working with all of you.
Thank you, Ms. M.
Can you speak into the mic, please?
My name is George Candler. I'm a PhD in public policy from Indiana University, and came here in 2010 to coordinate UNF's Master of Public Administration program, the only accredited graduate professional program in public policy administration in Northeast Florida. Yes. And one of my research areas of interest is accountability, which I think is...
Thank you, Dr. Candler.
My name is John Hartley. I'm a retired director with the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, and I was appointed by the sheriff, Mike Williams, after I did 35 years there.
Thank you, Mr. Hartley.
Yeah, good evening. Dave Ryback with Johnson & Johnson. Been a resident here for 5 years, about, plus or minus, a couple months, and been on the committee. This is my second year starting. It's been an interesting transition working from a corporate life and volunteering in the public service area, so it's an interesting transition.
Thank you, Mr. Ryback. I'm Ioana Allen, and I am excited to have the opportunity and the honor to serve as chair for the year. Professionally, I'm a former teacher and assistant principal. I did that for about 15 years. Currently, I run a strategy company and consulting company. I work with nonprofit organizations and professional athletes primarily, and I am a proud graduate of the MPA program at UNF. Dr. Candler was one of... the only, as he so eloquently stated, and he was actually a phenomenal professor of mine and what sparked my interest in ethics, so I wouldn't be sitting in this chair if it were not for him and his lovely wife.
Joe? Take credit for that, but not for your leaving DCBS. Oh. Talk about that later.
Good evening. Happy New Year. My name is Joe Rogan. I'm a brand new member at the Ethics Commission. I'm a lawyer in town with Smith, Halsey & Busey and a former sergeant in military police.
Good evening. My name is Anthony Salem. I'm an attorney in town. This is my second year on the commission.
Good evening, everyone. Leslie Jambar, a returning member to the commission. I served in 2014, and I'm very happy to be back. I'm an attorney, a partner at Terrell Hogan.
born and raised here in Jacksonville. I'm one of the rare people whose roots run deep. Five generations of my family have lived in Jacksonville. And I've served on the Florida Elections Commission, which gives me a unique insight when we're dealing with elections issues. I've also served on a grievance committee for the Florida Bar, dealing with, of course, ethics issues. And I'm just one of those people that, you know, a lot of people tend to call when they have questions about ethics. And so I just really enjoy the subject, and I'm happy to be back with all of you.
Hi, I'm Kirby Oberdorfer, and I'm the deputy director, as Carla discussed. I've been with the office, hard to believe, 19 months now, and I previously practiced and taught in the law school and also did some corporate work, so I've had some various legal background, but the most significant experience that I've had was serving as an ethics commission member for a little over 4 or 5 years here and having the distinct privilege and honor of chairing it and working with Carla, which ultimately led to my job that I love so much. So, welcome.
My name is Deborah Melvin. I'm recently retired from Johnson & Johnson, Janssen Pharmaceuticals in New Jersey. And came to Florida because my family is here, most all my family. I got bored not being around people and decided to work with the supervisor of elections and liked being around people again, so I applied for a job and was very fortunate to be able to get the job working in the ethics department with Carla and Kirby. I'm excited to work with all of you.
Welcome. We are excited to have you, and we're excited to have Leslie join us again, and Joe, and our families all together. So we're going to have a great 2017. At this time, we are going to move to our report of the nomination committee and the election of our new commission appointee. Dr. Candler, would you be willing to elaborate on that, please?
Yes. We nominated Maria Mark.
Anything else you want to share?
We had a number of other good candidates. Unfortunately, we were able to bring a couple of them onto the commission as well.
I would like to share something. Maria, a long time ago, was a paralegal in my law firm, and so I've known her for a long period of time, and then I watched her political career when she ran for office in Atlantic Beach, and I think she would make an excellent candidate for the Ethics Commission.
All right, thank you. Ms. Mark, would you like to come up and to share a little bit about yourself very briefly?
Do I have to give my name and address?
You do not. You absolutely do not.
On a controversial issue, I hope, so I don't mind that. I actually saw the position that was open on the Ethics Commission that was advertised on the Leadership Jacksonville website. And, being an elected official, a former elected official, and just life in general, I think, ethics is the backbone of just, who we are as people, and particularly as elected officials. We carry a lot of power. We have a lot of responsibility, and I think that if ethics isn't part of your integrity, then maybe you should think of doing something else for public service. So I thought this would be a really great way to continue my public service. And as Carla said, I've had the pleasure of knowing her for many years. I was a paralegal here in Jacksonville for 20-plus years, started when I was 12. But now I've had the privilege of working with some great attorneys here, Carla certainly being one of them. I've always enjoyed the legal field, the legal practice. Like to do the research, so I'm not afraid to do my homework, roll up my sleeves, and be prepared. I'm from Atlantic Beach. My husband is actually here, Bob Mark. He's a professor, or he's a program manager at the Florida State College, FSCJ, in their culinary hospitality department. So he keeps me well fed and keeps us happy in that department. Right now I'm at UNF. I'm in the Environmental Center. I've been there a little over a year now. And I was hired to head up their environmental leadership program. So it's an undergraduate program where we are hopefully grooming the next generation of environmental leaders here. So I'm real excited about that. It's great working with the students. As I tell people, they really give me hope for the future because this generation, they're pretty dynamic. So we have a teenage son. Hopefully we'll be graduating from Fletcher High School in the next few months, maybe going to UNF. Hobbies. I enjoy golfing. I try to play in the environmentally friendly golf courses, so I don't get too much flack about that. Enjoy nature photography, traveling, and so I really look forward to serving on the commission. I think I can bring some contribute some talent here, and I look forward to working with such a great commission and board. So thank you.
Thank you so much. So do we have a motion to move forward? Oh, I'm sorry. Is there any discussion before we move to motion phase? Yes? No? Okay. Do we have a motion to appoint Ms. Mark to the commission?
So moved.
Second? Yeah. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Welcome, Ms. Mark. Join us, please. Okay. Put you right to work. All right. So we're going to do reports. Do we have an Echo Office report?
We do, a short one. We were very busy doing outreach in December. Kirby and I went up to Harvard and did a presentation at a seminar that was conducted at the Graduate School of Education. And Kirby can tell you a little bit about that, Kirby. It was fun, wasn't it?
It was. It was much fun. It was a huge conference with over 600 attendees, primarily academia. But Carla and I were some of the few practitioners there. And it was all about engaging citizens and government, and a lot of emphasis on local government and how to reach people. And it was quite fascinating. And Carla gave an amazing presentation on The Tale of Two Cities, and she talked about ethics initiatives at the local level and the experience in the Jacksonville Ethics Commission and the process that we went through with City Council and getting their input and their buy-in and having them lead the way on passing the ordinance to put the charter amendment on the ballot for the citizens to bring about the independence of the office and to establish its jurisdiction over all of the entities in the city. And she juxtaposed that against a movement where the citizens, something scandalous happens, and the citizens rise up by their own initiative, and they take it onto the ballot on their own and get ballot signatures, and they don't get the buy-in and feedback from the local officials, and then they get it instituted, and then there's a lot of difficulty in implementing that because it hasn't yet been vetted by those that are impacted by it, so to speak. So it was an amazing presentation, so amazing that one of the participants said it was literally life-altering.
Wow.
And that she was...
We got to be careful about those people because they may be trying to steal you. Usually when people say stuff like that, they're trying to get you to come to where they are.
I think
are.
That was more for Carla.
That's how they plant the seeds.
She remarked about how wonderful the conference was and all these wonderful ideas, but she was tired of hearing people just sit around and talk about things and not actually do anything. And she felt like Carla really had left such a significant impact on how to do it, how to take those steps and translate all the talk into action. So,
thank you, Kirby. It was really interesting because I took about 30 pages of notes, and you have imagine these PhDs, it's all there. And all they do is think about one particular issue, and they research it for 2-3 years, and they really drill down, and they get this brilliant little piece of information, and then they sit there with it, and they put it in an academic journal that none of us, have access to. And so here they were discussing all these brilliant ideas about how do we get citizen involvement. And there was one speaker from MIT, and he talked about two forms of citizen involvement. It's either institutionalized or insurrection. And what we're seeing now is more and more insurrection, and people just going out and they're separate from government. They're not working within the system. Oh, no, that is not the trend in the future. It's social media out here and an insurrection revolutionary type impact on government. And so how can we take those forces and what's happening and actually get it to be institutionalized and work within the system, which has always been my thing as a revolutionary to do work with. But anyhow, brilliant ideas. And so hopefully we can incorporate some of that into our outreach and our training. The other conference I went to was in Panama, Transparency International. And a few thousand people from all over the world talking about how to increase transparency in government. And a big emphasis was local government. And so I spoke with Transparency USA and Represent US, which were two big national groups, and also a seminar with the United Nations on local transparency, because they've now seen, which I kind of had a hunch, it's so hard to do this kind of reform at the national level or international level. Where the reform is going to happen is going to be at the local level. This is where it's going to happen. And of all the ethics commissions in the United States, we're one of the more active ones where we're actually taking some of these issues and thinking outside of the box and implementing changes at the local level. That's where we're going to affect change in governments. And so the United Nations now is focusing, instead of national efforts, they're focusing at the municipal level, which is really exciting. So that was a workshop that I led, which was really exciting to see the concept expanding into the local area. So that took up the first 2 weeks of December for Kirby and I. And we also spent quite a lot of time interviewing for our new employee. We had 80 applicants, and HR narrowed it down to about 20 or so, and then we narrowed it down, and finally Deborah is sitting here, and I think she'll make an excellent addition going forward, so welcome to the group. That's my report.
Okay, thank you. OGC?
Can you talk into the microphone, please?
Oh, yeah. I really didn't have anything to add because I actually had asked Steve to come in and explain his because he wrote the opinion, okay. And I thought it'd be better for him to speak and answer the questions. So okay. That's all that I had. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, you're plugged in. Right.
Okay. Is it working? Okay. Okay. All right, so we're going to move into our committee reports from 2016. And before we jump into those reports, Ms. M, would you just give like a really quick kind of blurb on what each committee does, particularly for our new folks so that they will understand and have clarity?
I will do that as we're getting our microphones fixed here. Now, the reason I think it's important to give a little background on each committee is because you get to choose your committees for the coming year. And so one of these is going to hit you as the committee of your dreams that you really want to be on. So I'll explain each one and try to give a little pep talk on each one to inspire people. First of all, the complaints committee. This
Kirby was done with that report. That's really the dream come true one.
Oh, I've got a green light. Okay, I'm on. One of the functions of the commission is someone can file a sworn notarized complaint alleging a violation of our ethics code. And under Florida law, we hear all of those complaints in shade meetings that are not open to the public. Now, we don't get tons of complaints. We have had complaints against the mayor. Took one of our commissions a whole year, really, to process that complaint, and it ended up going to the State Ethics Commission. We just had three complaints that were disposed of, one against the current mayor and chief of staff and a former COJ employee. So we tend to get them in, not like flocks of them, but when they come in, we really have to go through them and analyze them. And, so that's the complaints committee. And I would say that the complaints committee last year was, Richard Brown was chair. He's no longer on the commission. And John Hartley and Anthony Salem were on the complaints committee. So that's the complaints committee. And actually what we have right now is we have a pending complaint and we're doing an investigation with the Inspector General's office. Kindly, the Inspector General's office has offered to assist us with our investigations because we're not investigators. I mean, lawyers can ask questions, you know, but we don't take sworn statements and we don't have the credentials to do investigations. The IG's office does, so they will help us with this particular investigation that we've got going on. That's the complaints committee.
And you want to talk about the others?
I can. Or do you want to take the reports from each one, and then I can talk, or I'll give a little on each one?
Can we just give the blurbs for all of them and then knock the reports out?
That's fine.
Okay.
Next is internal operations, and this is one that was chaired by Tom Paul for a few years. Unbelievable job he did. And the concept here was that we would have, like, an internal structure that we could build upon, that we wouldn't just kind of come to meetings and do whatever we felt like that particular night, that we would actually have a strategic plan. And we would work off of that plan and try to figure out where do we want to head as a commission. And this is sort of based upon risk analysis. It's based upon taking a look at what are our collective goals, what does the code say that we have to do, and really setting the tone for the whole commission. And Dave Rybeck was on that committee, and Tom was preening him to take over the committee, because CPAs and people that are in corporate compliance programs have to do a lot of this type of thing. Like, they can't just go to a corporation and say, hey, you know, we're working a lot on our ethics and compliance. They actually have strategic plans, and they know where they're going and where they're headed, and they monitor it, and they have accountability for the program. And so that's what the Internal Operations Committee is doing, and in fact did such a good job that the state of Florida was doing an audit on ethics commissions, and they were shocked to find out that we had a strategic plan for our ethics commission. They said, gosh, we have state agencies that don't have strategic plans. Anyhow, so that is an interesting committee. Anything to do internally with the Ethics Commission and how well the process goes is in that committee. Legislative is taking a look at new laws that we could propose to City Council, just the thing that we heard from General Counsel's office. Should we propose a law on that? Are the laws that we have locally good? I mean, do they make any sense? Should we have different ones? Should we eliminate the laws? Taking a look at the legal aspect of the Jacksonville Ethics Code. And the last one, open government. Open government has to do with transparency issues. We've looked into the use of text messaging, which became a huge issue in the City Council. And I can tell you that this commission had it a year prior, and we said, you know what? Council people text messaging all the time on all different phone systems is going to be a problem. We need to preserve those. They're public records. And there was a big issue of lobbyists texting in during City Council meetings, you know, like, vote this way. Here's an amendment for you, you know. And so none of that is transparent to the public. So that's the type of thing that the Open Government Committee looks at. Like, are we being open and transparent? Is there anything that we can do to increase that? Those are our four standard committees. In the past, we've also had an Education Committee. And that's probably, like, near and dear to my heart. That's like, how do we reach out into the community? We can do great work, be very inspired, and be one of the best ethics commissions in the country. But if no one in the community knows about it, and if we're not increasing public trust in what we're doing, you know, then that's not good. So education and outreach into the community, I think, is really essential. And so we've periodically had that committee. It did. But somehow when you take the name out of it, then it sort of doesn't happen as much. You know what I mean? I guess it could. Yeah, it was combined into open government.
I don't remember whether the nine committee members, whether the chair and vice
The chair typically does not. The vice chair does. You know, then we should call it open government and education, you know, like just to make people remember that, you know, education is in there. Anyhow, those are the committees and little snippet of what they do.
Or I like the outreach word. Like I love the fact that, you know, so maybe even open government and outreach for that particular one. And then they would serve a.
I do sir? Remember last year in the open government.
Can you use the mic, please?
Sorry. I do remember last year, Carla, especially. When you were discussing that open government issue and some of those issues, it turns out that that really needed to be addressed by the attorneys who are more in the legislative committee. So, you know, my understanding is more that the open government committee has become more an education and outreach committee. So if we just change the name of it to that, you know, I think we capture those two elements and keep us down to four committees. I'd like to go to three if we could, but...
would you now?
I would.
Okay.
Well, can I make a comment on that just generally? You know, it's hard because we don't want people just being loaded up with a whole lot of committee meetings. So, I mean, what's the point of that? It'd be better to have one commission meeting and one committee meeting and get something really crucial, you know, like the big ugly frog from my quote in the beginning. Like to get one big ugly frog, but you don't want to be running around just spending people's time inefficiently. So we've got to be able to address the issues that come in, but not kill everybody with a whole bunch of meetings, you know, so there's a balance.
I would just add, last year, I started in January, I think we had committees in May, pointed out, and at least the minutes are here from May, and then we didn't really start meeting until later in the year, and what a great opportunity for us. This discussion where we're going is really about how do we make things happen this year that we're And I would agree with George, having to be on even more than one is a challenge if you're on two. That's a lot of work already. And you know, I think as we get into the strategic plan, it's really what can we accomplish, right? So, you know, how much do we want to take on and being real given the fact that we're all, you know, volunteering our time. So.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And now that we have three staff members in the office, a lot of the stuff in between can be handled by the staff. Used to be no staff, and you know, if anything got done, it had to be the commission. Now it's you have the luxury of, you know, having people follow through, and an entire inspector general's office of 9 people to follow through on things. So 12 staff people that 17 years ago we did not have. Should make it easier.
And I know we have it coming up in new business to talk about our structure for the committees, but I will say that I want our year together and for the things that are happening in terms of that direction to truly be reflective of our commission. And so you'll have an opportunity to forward your preferences to Kirby with regard to which committees you'd like to serve on, so that I can take that into consideration as I'm working on our structure. Also, if you're interested in serving as a chair or a vice chair, then you'll be able to share that with her as well. So I'll talk about it again as a reminder a little bit later. So let's go ahead and jump into the reports, complaints. Was Mr. Hartley, Mr. Salem, Richard's not here, so I can't call his name.
I can give the report for that. I mean, there's one case pending, okay. And we're doing an investigation with the IG's office.
Okay. So. Are we going to do it now?
What?
The report?
That's the report.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to elaborate. I was like, what are you doing, Ms. Simmons? Are you going to say anything else? Okay.
Listen, it's in the shade. Everything
right.
connected
okay.
to that is in the shade.
All right. Internal ops. Mr. Ribbett?
Sure. I'll make the first run of it. George, fill in the blanks if you'd like. We had the opportunity to meet on September 6th and then again on November 14th, right before the commission meetings. And I think it was a really good experience for the three of us in our team. It was Tom Paul, who was the chair, Dr. Candler, and myself. It was an interesting experience because we kind of looked at where we are. I think having a strategic plan is really important. We kind of felt that some of the items were outdated. So in your packet, you actually have one of the last documents in there is a
the Word document that kind of captures, looks like this in your packet. And we kind of went through, we deleted certain goals that we thought were either obsolete or maybe challenging verbiage. We went through and kind of talked about the education committee and felt that we probably felt that it would be better with the transparency and open government committee. So that was a change that took place there. And I think one of the ahas for me learning was really Ioana, that your role as chair of the commission, you'll be doing a lot with Carla on outreach. And so I think that's going to be really the important thing, that you two work together. And for all of us who are other commission members, we really look to you as the spokespeople for the commission. Our job is really to defer to you. And really, our recommendation is to kind of have a plan. A, reactive is important, but B, to be proactive in the areas in the community. Maybe it's one or two organizations that we reach out to during the year. The final take that we had on it was, boy, we were sitting there trying to wordsmith each of the committees, subcommittees, and what their role should be. And it kind of dawned on us, well, there are certain things we can make changes to or make recommendations, and that's the red line that's on this document. But it really should be the subcommittees looking at what's important for them this year and really coming forward with the goals. So the ask on our part is to take a look at it once we know which subcommittees we're on and to kind of fine-tune it. And I think it's probably more of working on it in the next month or so, each of the subcommittees, and then more like a March timeline that we could really be aligned and finalizing the plan for 2017. I would say, though, that if, and it sounds like you're ready to go, I think it's really important that we all are ready to go this year and that we can really jump on things, each of our subcommittees. And I think it took us a while last year to get all the subcommittees organized. That's probably the Tom Paul that he kind of trained me, is we really want to make sure that we, by the end of March, we're really ready to go and we know what our subcommittees are.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Sound like Tom.
You already know where you, which committee you're going to be on. All right, legislative.
Thank you.
Legislative.
Legislative. Anthony is the only remaining member. Oh, no, well, Brian, but he's not here tonight. Okay. And Anthony, I can do a summary if you want, or you can. Want to say anything about our meeting? It was an exciting meeting.
Sounds like we're going to get to it in the new business anyways, for the discussion on the report, right. So it's pretty redundant. Oh, and then the revision of the ethics code that office is taking it on very, very diligently.
Yeah, here's the thing. Our ethics code is not where it needs to be on conflicts of interest. It has 40-year-old provisions in it. Doesn't make any sense. There's really problems with it. It is a major redrafting effort. And so we actually went in front of the legislative committee, and you all got sent, if you were a member back then, you all got sent all the different aspects of the ethics code and what it says now and what the best practice is and where it needs to be, and that needs to be drafted. One of the people that applied to be on the ethics commission, the seat that Maria is sitting in, one of them is an attorney from my class in law school, and he's retiring, and he really wanted to be on the ethics commission. We had a good group of people, and I said, how would you like to work on the revision of the ethics code and be the point person for it? He said, I'd love to be a volunteer for the ethics office, so we can incorporate. I hate to waste anybody that comes forward that wants to volunteer. So his name is Mike Altes, and he's going to be assisting so we can actually get more stuff to the legislative committee faster, hopefully.
Thank you. Any questions? All right. And then open government, which included transparency, that I chaired. And we didn't really do a whole lot last year. I think that out of all the committees, I'm very excited about just putting some new energy into that. I think that the way that we went about even the application process for getting new members and those organizations that we targeted to share information would be a really great list to kind of work from in terms of the outreach. I think it's great for them to get, you know, information from us that, hey, we're looking for new people, but if we could increase that level of engagement throughout the year, I think it would give us more bang for our buck, and hopefully have more people attending the meetings, which I also think is important. I've also been marinating on maybe scheduling a meeting with someone at the Florida Times Union to include something regularly that's happening in terms of an ethics feature, so that people can see what's happening with the commission and just use it as another method to kind of keep people involved in terms of the outreach. So I have a lot of great ideas about that. I'm looking forward to that for the new year. All those great things I learned in Dr. Candler's class have come in handy, definitely. All right, so we're going to... Yes, yes, yes. Thank you, Anthony. All right, so we're going to move to new business, and the first item there is review of our Ethics Commission evaluation of our Ethics Director. Ms. M, do you want to comment on that?
No, Joe Jaco, as chair, does that evaluation. The chair does it at the end of the year, and I, in turn, am going to do one for Kirby, and we'll be doing one of Deborah, of course, and I want to make sure that we always have our evaluations up to date, and we have that in place. So at least the director's is in place.
Does anyone have any questions about that? All right. Review of confidentiality and other procedures.
Okay. This is a grab bag for everybody. Just a few points that Kirby, Deborah, and I came up with for procedures. And the first one is confidentiality. And everything is public in this commission except for when we're in a hotline or a complaint situation, and then we're exempt from public records. And you have to keep all of those records confidential. Like if your spouse or whoever, your kids look at your computer at home and you've got an Ethics Commission complaint that got sent to you in your email, you have to secure all of that data. And so we have a confidentiality pledge that everybody signs. Deborah, do you have those? Or are they?
One packet.
Yeah.
Check through your packet. You'll see one page here that says... hotline confidentiality.
It just acknowledges that you know that we will cut your tongue out if you say anything about the confidential shade meetings. So please, you know, sign that, give it to Deborah, and remember, I did at one time encrypt all of the complaint things that we sent out on emails, but then everybody was forgetting the passwords, and then one time I forgot, and I couldn't remember how to get into the original documents. So we're not encrypting them anymore, but anything you receive that in the byline, the subject line, it says confidential, we really mean it, because if anything gets out on anybody before there's a decision on their case, it's devastating, and we can never put the cat back in the bag. So anyhow, sign the confidentiality. That's one. Second point is a lot of emails come to you during the month. If I see something interesting coming in national news, what another ethics commission is doing, I will send you that article, just FYI, so that you all know what other ethics commissions are up to. Sometimes Kirby and Deborah are going to send you emails that are really important. Like, could you get back to me within the next day about a time for a meeting? Or could you get back with us an RSVP? And they need it administratively. So if you see an email from me, you can just read it. If it's a newspaper article or if it comes from Kirby or Deborah, please respond within 24 hours and, you know, make sure that it'll help them in their work. Next thing, let's see. Oh, yeah, speaking to microphone, I have a big star next to that.
I think I've taken care of that.
Okay. Now, this is a question on how you want to do something. Notice that you each have a notebook in front of you with your name on it. Now, when you come to a meeting, and this is a procedure, like, tell me how you guys want it, but when you come to a meeting, your notebook will be here. When you leave today, you leave the notebook, and we'll keep it for you and bring it back down for you. You can always take it home, too, if you want to study up on everything and memorize the internal operating procedure. You can take this book home with you if you want, but just bring it back to the next meeting. These are all things that don't change that much, like the ethics code, the complaint procedures and stuff. So you'll have this as a reference book for you. Now, notice you got a big clump of papers when you came in. What do you do with those? These are all, everything for this meeting is going to be scanned and it's going to be up on the internet under Ethics Commission for this evening's meeting. Everything that you got in this little clump, even the confidentiality, everything will be up there. So you don't need to keep these because it'll be up on the internet, unless there's one that you're dying to take home and you want to study it more, like the strategic plan. So the thing that's important is when you're taking notes and you have your pen here and you're saying, I don't like the idea of the Ethics Commission doing such and such. I love the general counsel opinion on blah, blah, blah. You know, if you're taking notes, it's a public record. So we have to preserve those. You do not want 10 years from now someone to do a public records request and we have to find your notebook in your garage somewhere and you say, oh, I don't know, I had a flood in my garage and I can't give you the public record. No. Well, here's the only way I think we can do it. In your notebooks, you've been given lined paper here. This is for your public records. Anything notes you're taking or anything that you want to preserve as a public record, put on this, stick it in your little notebook thing in here, and we'll put them in a folder with your name up in the ethics office. We'll preserve your public records for you. If you take them home, I don't know how we do that. So now what some people do, and I won't mention any names, is they take the agenda and they write all over it. If I wrote things that were public records, then, you know, this has to be preserved too because this is a public record. And so slip it in here because it now has been written on. I think it's easier if you just keep it on lined paper. Any questions on that? You know, I just want to make sure that of all groups in the city that have to preserve public records and not mess up on this, it's got to be us. So that's just a way that I think we can keep track of it. Any comments, questions on how? Is there a better way of doing it?
Same person who likes to write on the agenda, it might be helpful to get a copy, maybe a scan, and send it back to me, and I would be happy to leave it in my binder. But I'm just like, certain things are jogging my memory that would be helpful.
You can leave it in here. Leave it in here in your little pocket, and we'll just preserve that for eternity.
No, his point is that it defeats the purpose if the binder remains here. And, you know, if we take it home and then bring it back just before the meeting, you don't really have a chance to put the new stuff in. So that the logistics of this gets challenging. And I think Dave is suggesting, which does make a lot of sense, is if he's going to scribble on his agenda and he puts it, or if we had a little or something in the folder that was scan and return, then, you know, he'll get it back, and during the month then he can ponder the notes that he's taken in terms of preparing for the next meeting.
Okay.
There's a back pocket that maybe back that could be the
we'll code return. Them, yeah. Well, yeah, back return. Pocket for a scan and return. Okay. But do you want to take home your notebooks and just bring it? Like, we were not thinking of punching holes and everything and giving you notice that today you got your clump, it was loose. Yeah.
So I'll give you an example, like taking in notes of the different committees, right? We're gonna get an email that says what committee do you want to go into? I leave my notes here. I'm not gonna really remember, so that's why I took a note just to describe and keep it simple for me in my turn.
Right. So you need to have access.
I have my iPad. I can take a picture of it, so I'm fine.
Oh, there it is. We'll use our cell phones to take pictures of whatever you need. But there's got to be a way. Like, what if you wanted to look up the internal operating rules to know what committee duties you've got or something? I mean, I don't know if you want to haul these notebooks home with you and just keep your notebook with you. I mean, that's an option. What do you guys think, Kirby, Deborah? You've been busy putting these all together.
I think it's, as we discussed, it is administratively challenging, is a good word to put together the notebooks every month, particularly if they're not really used. I mean, we talk about documents and we'll reference them, but I don't know how often you all really get a chance to look at them and to utilize them during the meetings. Having another person on board, though, does help with that. I will say that that's been a tremendous help, an asset already. She hasn't been here not even a month, and I wrote her a note, oh, my gosh, you did an amazing job. Thank you for helping me. But in light of that, I recognize that that shifts a big burden onto you all as well. If we change the way that the notebooks have been done and you need access to something and you don't have it, and it puts a lot of onus on you. One of the things Carl and I talked about was, does it make sense economically and environmentally to keep printing out copies of all the minutes? If we scan them and sent them to you ahead of time, would you read them? And so that's sort of the conversation that we're having. And again, I said that puts a lot of burden on them because they might not have time to read them, or they might read them and leave them in their car or print them out and leave them on the printer or whatever. So it's very convenient for them as professionals and busy members and volunteers to come into a meeting and have everything that you need right there. Having served on the commission, I can appreciate that. But it is administratively challenging. So that is sort of my two cents.
Defer to others, but my thought is,
can you use the mic? Sorry.
Great job on that point. I'm going to look at this stuff ahead of time, and so just for me, I really don't speak for anybody else here, but for me, it doesn't help me to have the materials here, because I'm going to look at them ahead of time, or I'm not, and so to just sort of have them here doesn't help. And then I agree that sort of having my notes stay here doesn't help me either. And I made a note on the general counsel to follow up and try to get a copy of that memo, and that reminder serves no purpose if it's in my binder and in the ethics office.
Yeah, the other compromise that I thought about is you have your notebook that has the static information that you might need. You can take it home or not, or just leave it here and we'll keep it for you. But there's a folder, just like you have a manila folder. You have a manila folder in here, and anything you want to take home with you, if it's your notes, if you want to take the ethics card, whatever you want to take, you just stick it in the folder and just take the folder home. You don't have to take the whole notebook. And, you know, but you just have to remember to not to anything that you write a public record on to keep in that manila folder, because one day when you leave the commission, I know it's sad to think that you'd have to leave one day, but when you do, you will have to turn that folder over to us and we'll preserve the records. So if you want, we can put a manila folder in each one. And then at the end of the meeting, you just kind of go through and figure out what you want to take home with you and take it in the folder. Would that help? You just take it. I mean, and then we don't have to scan it or anything, because eventually you're going to give us that manila folder at the end of your tenure in the ethics committee.
I need a red manila folder.
So another, I think, dimension of this is that now there is information online, obviously. We keep information online. If there was like a facsimile of the packet that was readily identifiable on our website, I'll admit that I don't go to our website as much. First point, so that might help a bit in terms of, you know, if you're home and there was something from last week and you just go onto the, you know, that. And then the second thing, you know, when for every meeting we get the minutes sent to us anyway, so that certainly does allow us to use every week's materials, you know, just to get up to speed on what we need. So would that kind of, other than the notes that, as far as being able to access materials in the binders.
Online, yeah, I agree with you.
So we get mm-hmm. this meeting, we get every meeting's information sent to us beforehand, and then if this is identical for everyone pretty much, right? So if this is readily available online, mm-hmm. and we all get kind of familiar with it, those of us who want to do homework, that should work. Leaving only if we come up with an agreement on what to do with the notes, and I think that'd be pretty quick. I scan my own stuff. My work, and it's tedious. It's tedious, but it's not that tedious. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you guys then could just the next day scan that stuff, there probably won't be more than, you know, a couple. That would work.
Those are the ideas from the only accredited program.
That too, yeah. To look into that place.
So when I was on the commission, we would get our agenda packet via email. But we were using iPads, so we didn't have any paper because we were trying to, you know, get rid of using all this paper for our agenda packet. So I'm not sure if, Kirby, if you send out like your agenda packet to everyone before the meeting electronically? Is that how you normally do it?
Sometimes it depends on the meeting and what comes up. Sometimes things come up after we send it out. Some things might come up that day, so some of it's very fluid.
Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you know pretty much what the agenda packet's going to look like. So if she's sending everything out electronically, we usually got our agenda packets about 2 weeks before the meeting, or tried to anyway. That was sort of the time frame. But they were pretty thick, so we needed time to look at it. So we may not need that much time for these meetings. But, you know, I didn't have to print copies, but I can, because obviously, you know, if we're using paper now. And then if we're taking notes, because I'm like Dave, I take notes on whatever I'm working on. You know, if we could be conscientious enough to just scan those pages the next day and get them, you know, back to the office, would that work?
That would work. Or you just keep them.
Keep them until the next meeting.
Or keep them until you leave the commission, but just keep them. And you can make this little packet really thick of all your notes and everything, or we can give you a red folder and take whatever you want home with you. But just, yeah, we don't have to scan it the next day necessarily, because that's a lot of work for you. But if you... What?
When you came and got it.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we do it quarterly. We'll send everything to get
scanned. Yeah, quarterly we can scan it and everything. Enough said probably, except hold on to your public records and either take them home with you and then stick them back in here. Whatever you want to make it easy, we'll help you with it.
Just to clarify, do you have a procedure that we need to follow? Because that's what we're looking for direction on. And particularly with regards to the minutes, do we keep printing them out for the meetings or do we not?
It's the wish of the commission, you know, like whether you want us to print out and hand out. Usually it's just going to be one page front and back of the meeting prior. It's not going to be like this where we're catching up on five meetings in November. It's going to be one page. I think if it's one page, if it's a lot like we have now, then I think it ought to be done in a digital format. If it's one piece of paper, it's, you know, not that bad for the environment. What do you think, Maria? No,
I think if we could be a week in advance rather than the day or two before the meeting, I think sending it electronically and saves off on the administrative and paper would make sense.
And then we would still have copies for
guests. Yes.
In attendance. I think that works. Is everybody in agreement?
Yes.
And leave your notebook here if you want. You can also take it home if you want. Any loose pieces of paper, just make sure they end up over here. And, you know, we'll look at it in a couple months and see how your notebooks are looking. If they're getting really fat, we'll pull things out and put them in your folder. We've got a folder on each of you. Oh, a purple one. Yeah, good, Dave.
That right?
Okay. Let's see if there's anything else. And I hate to – the administrative things are good to go over the first of the year, I guess. That's it. Oh, I guess I can throw in, you each have a Form 1 in here, financial disclosure, and some of you have already filed it for the year 2015. You filed it last year in 2016. Financial disclosure is Form 1. It's the limited form. It's just sources of income. It's not how much money you make. It's where you make it from, ABC Company or so-and-so law firm. And so... if you have any questions on that as a new member, let me know. Just fill it out, and we file it with the local supervisor of elections.
Everyone has to fill this out?
Yes. Yeah, well, you filled it out for 2015, calendar year 2015 when you came on in 2016. So you would file it any time between now and July 1st.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Per current members. For new members, it has to be filed within 30 days of your appointment to the commission.
Right. And call us if you've got any questions on it.
Do you need the original?
The Supervisor of Elections. File it with the Supervisor of Elections for Duval County.
Okay.
Okay, so structure of the committees, I know we already touched on this a little bit. So my ask is that if the commissioners would please by Friday, which is the 13th, so that should be easy to remember, please forward. Kirby, do you want it to come to you, or do you want it to go to Ms. Deborah?
To me?
To you.
Fine. Okay. I'll share them with Deborah.
Okay. So I'm going to ask that by Friday, you please forward to Kirby any preferences you have with regard to the committees that you'd like to serve on, as well as if you're interested in a leadership role as chair or vice chair on either of those committees. And then also, as we prepare to revisit our strategic plan and kind of identify what our goal and direction will be for the new year, if you could just include a very short blurb with regard to what is most important to you in terms of what we accomplished this year, then I think that would be really helpful. I also think it will lend to some really good discussion when we come together to actually revisit the strategic plan together as a team. Any questions about that?
And I would say what might be easy to remind everybody, and especially since Brian's not here, is if Kirby and Deborah send out an email to everybody and just say, here are the four committees again, and please give us a little blurb of what you're most interested in doing for the Ethics Commission for the year, mm-hmm. and like a little form to send out to everybody.
That sounds good.
Yeah. And I would also note, just for a training snippet, that usually when you do that type of thing in non-government work, you would send it all to the chair. And if any outside communications go to the chair, then that's a violation of the Sunshine Law, because you're communicating with each other outside of a notice meeting. And it's funny, because one time the chair was going to draft a resolution, and someone said, well, I'd like to move that after the chair drafts the resolution, that she sends it out to the whole Ethics Commission so they can comment on it, you know, if they have any corrections on it. It's like, no, violation of the Sunshine Law. And it's such a normal corporate practice, so it seems a little counterintuitive. I just mention it.
Thank you, Ms. M. We've talked about the filing of the form. So we'll jump to Florida Legislature proposed bill regarding amendment to Florida Public Records Act eliminating mandatory attorney's fees. Kirby?
If you were on the commission last year, or if you follow what happens in the Florida legislature, you may remember that there was a bill proposed by a Florida House member and a Florida senator to revise the Florida Public Records Act to eliminate what is currently a mandatory attorney's fee provision. And the reason they wanted to eliminate it is they're being lobbied quite heavily by the Florida League of Cities. Some people are using the mandatory fee provision and in the Public Records Act as a means of playing gotcha and leaking or squeezing money out of small municipalities. So, for instance, there was a really small town on the East Coast that was asked for any photos of bicycles or something. And so they spent days and hours trying to come up with pictures of bicycles, and they missed one that was about that big on their website, and then somebody filed a lawsuit accusing them of violating the Public Records Act. And so it's really become an onerous burden on some small municipalities to comply with hundreds and hundreds of public records requests that really aren't legitimate. They're just there to try to make money essentially off the attorney fee provisions is the genesis for the bill. Last year, the First Amendment Foundation lobbied pretty hard to maintain the mandatory fee provision, and we as an ethics commission discussed it. We ultimately reached out to other ethics commissions in the state, the West Palm Beach, Miami, Tallahassee, to see if they wanted to join forces and issue some type of joint resolution. I think we may have issued a resolution. We did. We issued a resolution that our ethics commission was in favor of the amendment proposed by the First Amendment Foundation to retain the mandatory fee, but also to give discretion to the judges to impose sanctions for frivolous lawsuits and that kind of thing. And ultimately ended up not passing. It died. Essentially, because I think the House or the Senate, one of them never took it up, and so it died, but it's yet back again. So this is, it's been filed again by the same House member this year. So I'm going to follow up with the First Amendment Foundation to see if they've been invited to the legislative process to participate and to come up with an amendment that is acceptable to them, or if we're going to need to take some more action again. And so stay tuned for an update at the next meeting.
And I'd like to also add that it's important that this was the first time last year when we got together with the other ethics commissions in the state first of its kind on Miami Ethics Commission Palm Beach, and we all discussed a statewide issue and came up with the position of all the state or the local ethics commissions, which I think was one of the reasons it never made it to the floor in the Senate, because they saw all the local ethics commissions opposing it and saying, no, you've got to work with the First Amendment Foundation and make sure that their concerns are handled in the bill. So we're watching it this year for the same reasons.
Thank you. All right, public comments. And before we move into public comments, just as a reminder and also for our new members, we have a 3-minute rule as it relates to public comments. And Ms. Miller is our enforcer of that. She monitors the time with regard to that and just kind of keeps track in terms of how we're moving along. So do we have any public comments today? Happy New Year, Mr. Markle.
Conrad Markle, concerned taxpayers of Duval County, 1146 Romney Street. I wanted to speak on a memorandum that was sent to me. There's been a flurry of emails and so on from Ms. Boyer, president of the city council, and John Creston Benny, the vice chair, about this ongoing discussion about how this public comment thing is supposed to land and the final analysis, I guess. But I have a definite point that in reading this thing over, John Creston Benny sent me some follow-up opinions by he and Ms. Boyer, but this is Ms. Boyer's original memorandum of October the 28th. On the third page, she talks about this thing about having to speak by the second reading of a bill. You need to make it a point to speak. Alternatively, there's this debate back and forth about whether or not the citizens should be able to come in and speak to the committees, like the Rules Committee is the main one in this case. And this last year, we had a chair of the Rules Committee, Matt Schellenberg, who opted to tell us that we could not come in and speak if we were not experts in a field or whatever, i.e. lobbyists, attorneys, et cetera. Other professions, I guess. Contrary to his predecessor, the former city council president, Bill Gulliford, well, he was like, I've heard Mr. Jaquat and Mr. Gillum and different people say here when they were chairs of the Ethics Commission that it's like the more public comment, the more transparency, the better. But anyway, Matt chose to not allow us to come in and speak at the Rules Committee hearings. And what happens is, if you don't make it by the second reading of the bill and you can't speak at the commission, if they vote to recommend not passing the bill, it goes back to the city council. And what I have a problem with and have had for 10 years is, you see these neophyte people, citizens who come down because they're very concerned over something in their neighborhood, their business, or whatever, that is coming up for a vote that night, being totally uninitiated in the process. The worst slap in the face I've watched for 10 years, and we've discussed this endlessly in the concerned taxpayers. I don't know whether the city council just doesn't get it or what, but they have a lot of irate and disenchanted citizens that feel like they've been denied fair due process because they don't follow this process until it gets all the way to the most critical point, and you're denied the right to speak. This happened with a bill I was pushing this last year, and I was not allowed to speak until after the vote was taken, after it had been recommended to be not passed by the Rules Commission, the Rules Committee. The same bill had been recommended by this commission 2 times, and it finally had made it into the process to be voted into law, and the Rules Committee recommended no. I wasn't allowed to speak, and I wasn't allowed to speak until after the bill had been voted on. Mr. Crescent Benny went to bat for me and tried to get a deferment for 2 weeks before taking the vote, and they wouldn't. That, there were only four council members that voted for it. But this is something that really needs to be taken into account, though, because I really feel sorry for the citizens who come down there who don't follow this stuff, and they feel like they've just totally wasted an
4 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Markle.
But you know what? I think Conrad could talk about this for 10 or 15 minutes, and so could I, because this is one of the issues the Legislative Committee and the Open Government Committee has to take up, and also the issue that we started out with the General Counsel's opinion. Just because General Counsel's office comes up with an opinion that says it's okay the way they're doing it now does not mean that we can't make a recommendation for that law to be changed. That issue needs to be discussed, I think, in the committee format, legislative, and also the issue that Mr. Markle brought up, which is true. Like, we have citizens show up here. They finally make their first trip to city council to talk. And so, I'm sorry, you didn't know the rules. 2 months ago, we had the hearing where you could have spoken on this. You mean you didn't know about it until you got this community flyer? Well, tough luck. You know, your time's passed. Really? You get citizens to come down here and we don't give them an opportunity to speak? So I think if we need to pull that apart, and we have an equal voice in this to the Office of General Counsel if the law needs to be changed in this area. So take it seriously, please, because Conrad and I will have a special meeting where we'll each talk for an hour about the importance of citizens being turned away when they finally come to City Hall. It's not right. Or, oh, you want to speak? Well, we need to know exactly where you live. Really? There's no need to know the street address. Maybe on a piece of paper, but not announcing it on TV. So we've got to stick up for people on these transparency issues. Truly, we do.
Thank you, Ms. M. And thank you again, Mr. Markle. I'm going to, I'm sorry. Oh, yes.
Is there a particular code for public comment that we can look at take a look at and become familiar with?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's a city council has their rules that are part of the ordinance code, and part of that deals with public comment. I will send you materials that I have on that. Okay. I'll send it to everyone.
Thank you.
And if someone's particularly interested in taking on some of these transparency issues, let us know. When you write the committee I most want to be on and the issue I most want to handle this year, and we'll make sure we get it handled.
Oh, sure.
Is that something that we currently have referred to that committee?
They were discussing it in the last legislative committee, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Just as a follow-up, the minutes from that meeting on November 2nd, 2016 that were approved today, that might give you some insight into the background of the discussion.
Thank Brian you. All, our vice chair, has been the point person on that, and he's met with General Counsel's office.
Any other questions about that? Okay, announcements, review of action items.
None this meeting.
Okay.
What? I have two.
You do have two?
I do have two.
Oh, my God. Okay, sorry.
What you got, Carly?
All right, so I have an action item, Deborah and I, to email all of you about the summary of the committees and to ask you for your committee preferences by Friday. You all have, well, I send that before Friday. You all have an action item to respond by Friday to let us know your committee preferences and the most important thing that you would like the commission to accomplish this year. And then I also have an action item as well to send you all the materials on public comment.
Can we just add a note, and I know that Brian isn't here, but I would like for the last subject brought up by Mr. Markle and Ms. M to be a priority for that particular group. So if we could just note that in our minutes so that everyone's on the same page, that would be really helpful.
Thank you. So noted as an action item.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'll send an email.
Thank you. All right. So we need to set a date and time for our next meeting and also training of our commission members.
What we did last year, instead of having two different times you have to come downtown, since we start our meetings at 5 o'clock, we just moved it up an hour. So the 4 o'clock was the annual training, and then you go right into a meeting. I think I brought snacks. That was most efficient instead of having the training be on another day. But I'll do it any time. The new members who have not been trained, it's 1 hour. Tail end half hour is like 4:30 to 5 would be existing members who've been through the training last year. So I've cut it, you know, so it's not repetitive for people that have been through the training. And then I handle the brand new members starting at 4 o'clock. If you want to do it before the next meeting or any other time, lunch, breakfast meeting, whatever you want. But in the past, everybody's just wanted to kill two birds with one stone.
So in terms of dates, I know we normally typically try to stick with the first Monday. Is anyone opposed to the second Monday by any chance of February? It's the 13th. Is anyone opposed to that? You good with that?
Is it a holiday?
The 13th? No, the following Monday is, but not the 13th. I've just learned it. I'm going to the Super Bowl, so
oh, that's exciting.
I won't be here. I'm going to be gone. Okay, so we can do the 13th?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll do the 13th and then training at 4, Ms. M?
Mm-hmm. 4 for brand new members, 4:30 for members that got training last year.
Okay, so 4 for new members, 4:30 for everyone, and then our regular meeting starting at 5. Correct? Okay. All right. And with that, if there's nothing further,
point of clarification, if there's mm-hmm. a conflict, would there be another alternative
training? Well, if there's a conflict, I'd try to, you're an old member. Yeah, so I could get through your training one-on-one if you want. If you treat me to lunch. No, just kidding.
Have a conflict?
I don't yet, but I'm involved with an acquisition.
So there could be. So I would give you a crash course. I would do it that way. I'll work it out with anyone who can't do it.
Anyone else? All right. And thank you so much for our great first meeting of 2017. We are adjourned at 6:47. Have a good night.
Thank you. Good meeting, Ioana. Yay, our new chair.
Yay, Alicia.
Thank you. Thank you.
What?
Tom Coughlin.
What?
Headed to Jacksonville.
Oh. Is he?